You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Now, by the age of 13, our first guest today thought she'd killed someone with a thought, spread untold disease and spied upon her classmates. And only by performing a series of secret routines could she correct her wrongdoings. But it was never enough. And this was because she had a severe case of obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, she's bravely here to tell us all about it. Welcome to the show, Lily Bailey. Hi, Lily.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks.
Good. Now, you've put all this into a book. It's an extremely compelling book, and it details your life with OCD. What made you decide to write it? Was it to help others, or was it more cathartic for yourself?
That's a good question. There are not many good reasons to write a book about how nutty you are, and I was worried about how I would be perceived. But the thing that made me do it was I was just so frustrated by how we misunderstand OCD. You know, when I was a teenager, I really thought OCD was just about, you know, liking things straight, liking things tidy. I didn't realize that having OCD just involves having obsessions, which are unwanted intrusive thoughts, and compulsions, which are the action you take, physical or mental, in response. And so when you think about it like that, it can really be about anything, but we don't talk about it like that. And I was so frustrated because there are so many people like me who live with this thing for years, but we've got no idea of what we have, to the point where when I was diagnosed, I said to the GP, well, I don't think I do, you know, my room's a tip kind of thing.
I see what you mean. Yeah.
The reason I wrote this book was because I just thought I've had enough of people misunderstanding, because it costs people years of their lives.
You are right. That's how I think most of us think of OCD. You know, you have to have like the volume control on an even number, or you have to have all your cans in the right direction in a cupboard. But you say the way you have OCD is you hear it as another voice in your head.
Yeah, actually not anymore. But as a child, I did. I heard it like an imaginary friend. This voice in my head would tell me to perform compulsions. If I thought I'd done something bad, the voice in my head would tell me to put it on a list, a mental list in my head. And when I was really young, the voice would sort of say things like would tell me to check on my sister, because I'd be worried that she was going to die in her sleep. So I'd be kind of compulsively checking her heartbeat, and checking that she was breathing. As I got older, actually, and I had therapy, the OCD voice went away. But funnily enough, the OCD didn't go away. I just continued doing the things all myself. My psychiatrist once said it's possible that I heard it as a voice because I was so young when it started that it just made sense for me to hear it that way. But I don't really know why I did. But there are other people who hear their OCD as a voice, the OCD voice is not an uncommon thing to hear spoken about.
Right, so that can be a usual trait. Has your OCD changed over the years? Has it always been the same things, or does it change every now and again to a different sort of compulsion?
Well, OCD is a shape-shifting condition, and it's kind of a bit like whack-a-mole. Sometimes you knock one obsession on the head and then another one just springs right up. For me, there have been certain obsessions that have been fairly consistent throughout my life, like thinking I'm a bad person and having to make lists. And then there have been other ones that have kind of come and gone. I used to be very concerned about contamination for a period of time, and that wasn't a kind of permanent thing. I'm not really concerned about that anymore. And sometimes the obsessions will change. Like I remember having a new obsession actually just this week about having to do the zip on my jacket up like a certain number of times instead of just going up and down, up and down, up and down with it, which is more stereotypically OCD, I guess. And actually, to go back to what you were saying about the cans and people liking things straight and that being what we think of as OCD, that can be OCD with the volume control on a certain level or whatever. But for it to be OCD, it has to cause the person significant distress. If you're just sort of watching TV and you say, oh, I'm a bit quirky, I have to have it in multiples of five, but that's the only thing you do ever and it doesn't cause you distress, it's not OCD. If you spend hours doing that because you think your family are going to die if you don't, well, then that would be OCD.
Yeah, I understand. And you mentioned earlier, which is your title, Because We Are Bad, OCD and A Girl Lost in Thought. Did you think you were bad then?
Oh, massively, yeah. And that was kind of what drove all the compulsions, really. Just this really entrenched belief that I was a bad person and that if I didn't deal with that, that something terrible was going to happen. And it's actually a line in the book. I describe having this intrusive thought that I've made my cousin die. And then I say, well, I know I did it because we are bad. And we didn't know what we were going to call the book, but then that just stuck out as the obvious title, because that really does describe why I do everything I do.
And in the introduction, I said by the age of 13, is that just your earliest memory, or do you think it started at the age of 13?
Oh, no, it started a long time before that. I don't actually remember not having it, but it was around 13 that some of those intrusive thoughts became really intense. But no, I had it ever since I was really small, and that's not uncommon either. Although OCD does not, the average time for it to start is in teenage years. There are people like me who have it, like, you know, since day one.
And can your parents remember things that you did then? Because obviously you, at a really young age, you wouldn't be able to have thoughts of killing people or whatever. But at a really young age, you probably had a different sort of OCD, a different degree.
You'd be surprised. The thought I had about whether I'd killed my cousin, I was pretty young then, actually. I
think really?
I was about 7 or 8. But before that, it was more physical. I would sort of check things, check my sister, check under the bed because I was scared of monsters. Obviously, lots of children do that. But for me, it would be like, you know, all night kind of thing. Mm. I think my parents, they thought I was quite an anxious child and quite fidgety. But they didn't have an understanding that it was OCD or what it was, and that wasn't their fault. It's just that there's not really much. It's better now, but when I was a child, there really wasn't much understanding at all of what this disorder was. And my dad would kind of say, "Oh, stop fidgeting, it's really annoying," which is fair enough. Probably was really annoying to watch. And so as I got older, I kind of internalized it all. I had comments from friends who would kind of take the mickey of me and imitate my repetitive actions, not in a really malicious way, but just, you know, as friends take the mickey. And I realized all the physical checking and stuff I was doing was kind of abnormal, and I internalized it a lot more. And so then as a teenager, it would have been a lot harder for anyone to see, and I think people probably just thought I'd grown out of it, whereas actually conversely it had come much worse.
Had it? The more you grew up, you know, the older you got, the worse it got.
It just got worse and worse as I grew up until I got help, definitely. Yeah.
And what help did you get?
Well, when I was 16, I was diagnosed with OCD. And like I said, I thought, I don't think I have OCD. I was seen by a psychiatrist, and I had cognitive behavioral therapy with her, which is, it's a type of talking therapy. It's a bit different to classical psychotherapy in that it's rather than sort of talking about your past and all the emotions and feelings, it's more about creating a behavioral change in the moment, dealing with the obsessions as they come in. In OCD, you do a thing called exposure therapy, which sounds a bit nuts to anyone who isn't kind of in the initiated CBT circle, because you can end up doing things like, say you've got contamination OCD, you might have to lick a toilet seat.
Oh, no.
I know. And people say, well, why would you do that? Even I wouldn't do that. But then again, you know, if you didn't have cancer, you wouldn't have, you know, extensive radiotherapy. Sometimes you just have to do things that seem a bit intense to get better. And actually, there's a massive evidence base for CBT that feeling the fear and kind of just sitting with it is actually the most effective way to beat this. And so it was incredibly helpful for me. I'd have to do stuff like walk along the street, and if I saw a child, I might be worried that that there'd been a CCTV camera that had caught me looking at the child, and that I was then going to go, I was going to be accused of being a sex offender and go to prison. So then to do my exposure, I might have to walk along the street and actually look at that child and not put it on my list. It's incredibly difficult in the moment, but it is really effective.
It must have been so it must be debilitating for you. It must be awful to try and get through a normal day.
It really is. Actually, it's not debilitating for me anymore. I don't say I'm completely recovered, because it still affects me sometimes, but my life is just so much better now.
Oh, it really is.
I can really enjoy things, and it's just comparatively wonderful. But when it was at its worst, I mean, life just becomes a massive slog. Everything is a chore, and you're trying to engage with people and look normal and have a conversation, but it's just really difficult because you've got all of this stuff going on in your head and you're just never really present.
I like this idea of exposure therapy. I'm just thinking if our listener is associating themselves, so they should get themselves off to see a CBT person, a cognitive behavioral therapist, to do exposure therapy.
Yeah, and in my case, that was with a psychiatrist, but the norm is actually to do it with a counsellor or a psychotherapist. If you go to your doctor as well, they can point you in the right direction.
And you said that you're a lot better, and you know, you sometimes have bad days, but you're a lot better than you were. What would trigger off a bad day? Would it be stress?
Yeah, sometimes stress. I've been quite stressed at the moment because the paperback version of the book's come out, and I've been doing interviews and rushing around, and that is quite a lot of pressure, kind of public speaking. And so I've actually noticed in myself that it's kind of flared up a little bit, not massively, and I'm aware of it. So sometimes stress, and then sometimes it can just seem completely random and you don't know why. You were fine one day, and then the next day it's like, oh, it's reared its ugly head again. But it's about kind of understanding what it is that you have and then being better able to deal with it when that does happen.
Well, as far as interviews are concerned and speaking, you're doing this one very well, so I wouldn't stress about that. I believe you've now got a son. Does he struggle with OCD?
I definitely don't have a son. I've got a dog.
Oh my goodness, I'm so sorry. That's what it says here in my notes. Does your dog suffer with OCD?
Well, he doesn't suffer with OCD, but he does help me with mine. Sometimes I'll be repetitively performing an action and he'll just tilt his head and give me this weird doggy look. Which is, I just think you can't underestimate the benefits of animal companionship.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I
did call him my son. Maybe you're getting that.
Maybe I did. Oh, well, it's a nice story anyway. Just finally, on a more of a serious note, it is a deeply personal book, and I think you're very brave to talk about it. Was it difficult to write? Did it bring all those feelings back again from childhood?
Yeah, I mean, so the thing that I found really difficult was that when I was a child and teenager going through all this stuff, because the OCD was so incessant and so all-consuming, I didn't really have time to be sad about the fact that I wasted so many years of my life. But when I was writing the book, I was actually in a much better place. And going back, it was kind of like a grieving process, because I realized how much time I'd lost doing this stuff, and I was kind of connecting with my younger self again, and I really felt sad, actually, in a way that I hadn't felt at the time. That was quite difficult.
Yeah, I'm sure. Well, I really, really hope it goes well for you. It's called Because We Are Bad, OCD and a Girl Lost in Thought. It's just out a couple of weeks ago, March the 12th, I've got here, Lily.
Yes.
Brilliant. By Lily Bailey. Go out and buy it now. Listen, I salute you. Thank you so much, Billy, Lily, for coming on to the show. You and your dog and your son. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.